Hi, this is Damien O'Doherty on the Center Maryland podcast, the Lobby Pod. We're excited today to have a friend, a coach, a partner, somebody that believes more in the power of networks than I do. And you know, you all know how reliant I am on the power of the brilliant and beautiful people in our community. But I want to tell you a little bit about Matt before we get started. Matt's work has really spanned a broad array of industries throughout his career, from healthcare to technology, real estate, investment, consumer products. He's worked with a ton of Fortune 500 companies, private equity firms, startups, and everything in between. He's about my age, so he's seen it all at this point. He's the CEO of something called Advantage Foundry Network. And this is a global CEO network that's very personal, it's very savvy, very intelligent. And Matt, you know, comes to us from an advisory services firm called Advantory. But his experience before going to Advantory was also incredibly strong. He had big leadership roles at the McChrystal Group and Crosslead. He's a certified executive coach. He completed his undergraduate studies at the renowned Brown University and received his MBA from, in my view, the equally renowned Dartmouth College Tuck School of Business. He's a dad, he's a husband, he's a Californian, and he has the most incredible global network of CEOs that I've encountered. Matt Sitter, welcome to the Lobby Pod here on Center Maryland.
Thanks, Damien. Great to be here.
Matt, networks. Talk to me about, I think I have a nice network, this whole community of people that we have here in Maryland, business leaders, government affairs specialists, public relations people, government officials, et cetera. They all have incredible networks themselves. Talk to me about what AFN does for a CEO leader, what you provide them, not just the network, but the coaching. I'd love to hear all about what AFN's all about.
Sure. Thanks, Damien. And if folks want to check out what AFN's all about online, you can go to afn.global, no.com, just straight up afn.global, and you can find more information there. As we were looking at how the world has changed over time, and we were thinking about what our core philosophy is that change is where opportunity happens. And taking advantage of those opportunities is really at the core of what all of us are trying to do. And what we thought about with respect to AFN was, if you can have a network that is diverse in expertise, experience, and perspective, you're a lot more likely to be able to take advantage of those opportunities that are out there. And with the pandemic occurring, everyone got used to using tools like Zoom or video conferencing. But what it allowed everyone to do is really gather on a global basis that you just couldn't have done as easily before. And so as we were thinking about, if we were to index for the best way to come up with great ideas and the best way to have better reach, what would that network look like? And so that's how we ended up creating AFN, where we're looking for a where we've built a diversity of CEOs coming together, helping solve each other's problems, but also looking for where those parts of the Venn diagram might overlap so that they can solve new and interesting challenges as well.
So you're a CEO in Baltimore, Maryland, or Montgomery County, Maryland. You join your network, Matt, you join AFN. What's that experience feel like to a new member CEO?
Well, so I would say, first and foremost, there is a privilege and a burden that goes along with leadership, and CEOs feel that fairly acutely. Being able to be in a group where you have people that are facing some of the same challenges, that's very helpful. So it's a comfortable environment from the beginning. What we are actively working to do is we put our CEO members into what we call them hub groups of eight, where they meet on a persistent basis about once a month. And within that group, typically we'll have a sharing of information and ideas. We're sharing what we are gaining from the broader network overall with AFN. So those learnings that we're actually developing from the organization as a whole. And we'll do one-on-ones with each of the CEOs on a monthly basis as well, ensuring that we're understanding what are the challenges that they're facing in their business and how they can help resolve them, but also how they should extend their network. And then that feeds in a virtuous circle with the hub group itself, so that, you know, we can make sure that everyone's learning from what the experiences of each other are. We also offer topical roundtables on a frequent basis where CEOs can learn about new or different ways to approach challenges or opportunities that they may be facing.
So let's break that down a little bit. So in addition to the one-on-one coaching that you're offering the CEO, you're going to put them in essentially like a group therapy situation, right? It's like several CEOs from all across the world, right? Be right on your screen and you're sharing those information and challenges. And then what is the third key point is that you all welcome some of those CEOs to give presentations to the entire global network, right? So how many CEOs do you have in that entire global network?
It's around 2,700 global CEOs. And I'd say, you know, in addition to those folks, we're actually constantly looking for subject matter experts that can bring new insight to our community in general. So, you know, if there's, you don't have to be a CEO to deliver insights to our network.
Yeah, I'd love to give people a little vibe of what it's like for me. I'm a pretty recent member of AFN. My partner out in California, Stephen Kuhn, is helping you drive this process for CEOs. Just to give people an idea of the things that you and I would talk about in our one-on-one sessions. I talk a lot about, we talk a little bit about burnout. We talk about one of the most interesting things that I thought you brought to bear to me was to look at my network from an age standpoint and make sure that I am not just leveraging all of my relationships in people that are exactly my age. I need to have people with more experience ahead of me. I need to reach out and try to mentor and communicate and bring along younger people in that experience. What have you gotten a kick out of listening to me prattle on about my public affairs practice and how I can grow it across the country of the world?
Well, we're all on different parts of our journey, I think. And, you know, core to us at AFN and how we actually do the moderating and the coaching is we want to make sure that there is a strong sense of business acumen for all our moderators, but also how interpersonal relationships work and how ecosystems actually operate as well. And so, you know, Damian, I would say that, you know, your job has been entirely different from mine. And I think that, you know, being priding myself on trying to be a constant learner, I get to hear about all the different types of work that you're doing out there and how that may apply to other folks that get together, but really understanding like, hey, how are you managing relationships? How are you prioritizing those relationships? What are those things that are going to make you actually operate the best you can so your business can operate very effectively? It's immensely interesting to hear about all those things that are help making you go, because that just increases the knowledge that I can understand about how we all operate and, you know, even how I operate.
How mind blowing was, I mean, it's probably de rigueur for you, happens all the time. But for me, we got into a pretty deep conversation, and I know you have no intention of being a therapist, but you got me to a point. you got me at a point where on my own, I started to think, you know, am I treating my colleagues in my firm similarly to dynamics that I was raised in my family and how I operate within some of my familial context today? Actually, I sort of transpose those or use those same rubrics to position myself with in my firm, and I found that absolutely alarming. But it gave me such a sense of self-awareness. I mean, it's really a game changer.
Well, that's great to hear. And I will say that, you know, therapists play a very strong role in the world, and I would never purport myself to take that position or anything like that. You know, I've got a lot of respect for the therapeutic process and what has to go into it. I would say that the difference in how I like to make sure that I'm approaching things is what's the outcome that you're actually trying to drive for, you know, and therapy can be great in terms of uncovering the root cause of why things are a certain way they are. My goal is to say, like, all right, you know, what's this future state that you're aiming for, and what are the actions that you need to take to get there? And so in part, that might be exploring like why things are, but the most important thing for me is, hey, how do we create this different state of what we're trying to achieve?
Yeah. Key thing I'd like to point out is this, the focus group of leaders, when you put us all together and we got 6 or 8 people on a call, just to give people an idea what that looks like on my screen. You know, I've got a CEO out of Florida who has run a bunch of call centers and has a really incredible sort of platform for providing support services to companies. You know, then we've got a CEO that has a major cyber operation underway that he's leading, but then he's been asked to take a big senior role in sort of the mothership corporation, and he's a little torn between those two opportunities. Or, you know, I'm going to name somebody here. We also have another great Maryland CEO, or we have a great Maryland CEO on that screen of 6 or 8 CEOs. And that is the head of Olive Ventures, the CEO of Olive Ventures in Maryland, Greg Cangelosi, who we all know has founded things like, you know, the greatest co-working situation in Baltimore. He sold Blue Sky Factory at a pretty young age, done some amazing things. So, you know, I got a local guy in there that I bounce things off of. And then I have, you know, people, you know, in on other continents, and we're all sharing these experiences. I think Greg and I thought it was pretty remarkable. We learned so much just listening into what I think our colleagues would call day-to-day struggles. Right. But man, they seem to evince and bring out so much more than just day-to-day.
Well, and I think one of the things that you mentioned there, Damien, I mean, you were talking about all these people who are in different industries. And I think that there's so many good mechanisms out there to network with people who are in your same industry. But really, the people who come up with the best ideas are connected to people who are unconnected to each other. You know, there are these folks who act as integrators of different ideas that are out there. And so when you talk about someone who's in Florida, who's running a call center operation, someone who's in Canada running a cyber operation, someone in Germany who's running a logistics operation, they're all coming at it with a slightly different perspective. And when we have discussions, we might be talking about acquisitions and how you actually integrate companies into what you're doing. The difference in experience, it's meant almost as a case study to understand how other people think. You don't necessarily have to take someone's advice word for word or how they're doing it, but it does expand your thought process on different approaches that you could take around it. And that capability to take those ideas from a bunch of different places and put them to work for you is something I think is pretty unique for AFN.
Yeah. And I think people will find that when they have these conversations with other CEOs, they'll get triggered in a positive way. I mean, we had looking at different deals and acquisitions in Maryland and across the region. And you know, one of the things we're very confident about is if we acquire another practice, or we acquire a whole new set of practices together and merge them, let's say with KO, that we can convert their public affairs approach that they currently are under to ours, and that we can drive some real efficiencies and value that maybe other firms haven't. And we were talking with our colleague, Mark, out of Salt Lake City, who is a CEO of a national staffing firm. And he said to me, you know, he had some crystal clear words like, I have no doubt that we can convert the acquired businesses, not only into our culture, but into our efficiencies and the values. And it was just like, oh my gosh, I'm hearing the same thing in a couple of different places. And it gives you a little bit of courage, I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just again, understanding that a lot of these challenges that you face in leadership, you know, it doesn't matter what industry you're in, or as you're trying to build a successful operation, all of the tasks that go into it blend together in some way in terms of what makes you a leader. And so, you know, we're all good at different things. Being able to bring that together in a mix for a moderated discussion where we are typically following a specific topic, but really making sure that we're surfacing all the individual knowledge of the people that are on the call. I think that gives that diversity of thought that is helpful for us to stretch our brains in new directions.
The third thing you pointed out is, so first we have the one-on-one, then we have the group sessions, and then you sort of turn it inside out. And you gave a person like me a chance to host sort of a thought leader session where I could talk to all 2,000 plus of your CEOs and provide a long form piece of content. Not only could I do that, but you encouraged me to bring other partners into the conversation. And so I was able to bring the world's greatest government affairs leader that I know, Cullum O'Comertoon, from 50 state. And then I was able to bring, you know, the youth and energy of Gordon Bronson, who's been at 30 years old. He was the senior vice president of public affairs for WeWork and Reef Technologies. And it was a great format for us all to share together to a pretty targeted audience, a global audience. And, you know, I found a ton of value in that. I think Cullum and Gordon found some great value, and hopefully those CEOs came to understand a little bit more about how to utilize social media and how to communicate through crisis in that workshop.
You know, this was an important value to the network as we thought about it, because if you're in a set group of, you know, 8, 10, 20 people on a regular basis, and you have something interesting that you want to talk about, but no one else is interested in talking about it in that group, you're not going to talk about it. With us being a more centralized network, you know, what we're able to do is we're able to actually bring the information together, knowing our members so well, and we can say like, hey, here's a topic that you may be interested in that you can surface the information on. Essentially, the network reformulates around that particular challenge or discussion. The people who want to participate in that public affairs discussion or something on how I'm sourcing for mergers and acquisitions when I'm under, you know, a $10 million company, you know, this allows us to actually be really responsive to the types of challenges that people have. And one thing is definitely a certainty is that the problem sets that you're facing are going to change as well. And so being able to leverage that collective experience of the network and both the successes and mistakes that people have made, that's really what we wanted to be able to offer on the topical side of roundtables that we've got, so that you can, again, reformulate around those problems and learn new ways to resolve them.
One of the things that brought so much energy and insight into our conversations really was CEO leaders opening up about their failures, me chief among them, I hope.
Yeah.
I always feel like losing is learning, and I was taught to never lose growing up. And, you know, being afraid to fail, I think, limited a lot of my reach early on in my life. Talk to me about the dynamic that you're creating between these different CEOs when it comes to sharing their struggles.
Yeah. So I'm a nerd on a couple things. One is on group dynamics. The other is on networks, unsurprisingly. And, you know, there's a book that I read a while back called The Rise of Superman. And it talks about this concept of flow. You know, when you're in the zone, you know, you know how to, you can feel it, you know, where you're getting so much done that you got 10 hours of work done in two. And we've all had that experience in some way, shape, or form. And there's a chapter in that book called The We of Flow. and it's about how teams operate. And so you think about how, you know, when a jazz band is working really well or a sports team is working really well, it all seems seamless. And the conditions that you can use to create that feeling where you can get that psychological safety for the group, those are conditions that you can consciously set. And there's three things that really stuck out to me as I've been learning about how to set those conditions is having some sort of goal, an element of novelty, and then some risk that you're recognizing other people take. And so I think, you know, Damian, when you mentioned being vulnerable and sharing some things about you, that risk being recognized, that changes the group dynamic quite a bit, where you can actually gain that trust more quickly. But that has a knock-on effect of sharing much more deeply on those other topics that may be more business related, but because we went at it from a personal angle and we had something shared that involves some risk there, you know, that ended up being shared more quickly. And one of the mechanisms that we do is we talk about, hey, what's a favorite song or movie that someone has? We play a little bit of it and what that person's experience was around that song or movie. So it's getting really deep into them personally, where they can share something about it. Your favorite song has usually got to do not just with the song and how it feels to listen to it, but also the emotions that you heard on or an experience that you heard around that. So that allows us to really surface those experiences of individuals and leverage that for the rest of the conversation.
So I was running my mouth or recommending music tunes to you at some point in the past. And then this past week on one of our calls, I heard one of the most moving songs in the soundtrack of my life. That was all coordinated or talk to me about
well, so, that. You had, at one point I had you answer a question on what your favorite song was, and that's what you answered. And there was no additional context behind that for me. Really, I'm just trying to surface like, hey, this is something that's meaningful for that person. And you know, you end up sharing a story that was very powerful around why that song was so important to you that the rest of the group was like, oh, you know, it's like it forces you to take a step back and really changes the dynamic palpably. The fact that you can do this in a remote format where we're all on a Zoom call together, I think that's pretty amazing that, you know, you can still get that emotional connection.
Yeah. So I talked to you some other time. You just asked me what my favorite song was. I said, Papa's Home, which is by Widespread Panic. My friend, David Carroll, a listener and guest here, will appreciate that. But that song in my head is all tied to my daughter's very successful leukemia fight. So we started off the call and you started playing that song and asked everybody, do they know what this song is? And do you have any thoughts about it? And man, right out of the gate, it just broke me up a little bit. And in such a good way, I think that it gave a lot of people context in a hurry about, you know, what my life is like today and what shaped it, you know, those seven other people on the call. So it was beautifully jarring.
That's great. That's good. That's really good to hear. It is funny that the number of our community members who have Rocky as one of the theme from Rocky as one of their favorite songs. I don't know what it is about that. Could be an age range. It could be, I don't know, you know, this aspiration against difficult odds, but that seems to come up quite a bit.
Before I get into you a little bit, I'd love to hear it. You know, this sounds very elite, you know, global CEO network. It's got kind of a vibe like you'd see with Chief, which is some of my female friends and colleagues are really digging into that coaching and network experience and I've seen other friends of mine both lead and participate in something like Vistage. You know, how would you say that AFN distinguishes itself from those experiences or experiences like them?
Well, I would say first and foremost that our leaders who participate, they take their leadership seriously. This is not a comment on Vistage or Chief. I'm just describing what our audience looks like. They take their leadership seriously. They know they don't have all the answers and they're looking for those answers elsewhere, their businesses are capable of scaling, and they want to make sure that they scale. And they believe that the knowledge of other people out there can help with scale. And I would say again, like this gravitation towards the concept of a network is that, you know, we all have our own networks, and you have to actively manage your own network, you know, the people who you stay connected to. They say you can only really have 150 relationships at any given time that you're out there managing. AFN acts as this external brain for you on, hey, how should your network be growing, and who should you be connecting to as well? So us thinking about like, hey, what are the active connections? What are the active intersection points that you should be having with our other community members, and how do we facilitate that? I would say that that's one of our biggest differentiators, that we're thinking about, hey, what are those things that are, you know, maybe lateral thinking that allows us to say, hey, you ought to be connected with Joe or Bill or Betsy over there because there's some aspect of their business that you share or some problem that you're facing that may be similar to what they have faced in the past.
There's something very prone about what you all do. I'm trying to find the words to explain it, but Zachary, I think you're going to have to edit this piece out, but let me go right into Matt. Oh no, I know what I wanted to say. Matt, one of the distinguishing features that I found, or tone, or part of the culture was, you know, I don't know if it's your Dartmouth MBA talking to us or what, but you know, I just got a sense that as soon as we were all together, we all understood that we were there for one-on-one coaching. We all understood that there was an opportunity to present ourselves to the network, and that we all had this group of fellow CEOs that we could run through our day-to-day and our big visioning with. That's all wonderful. But throughout that, there has been this, you know, pretty upfront prone approach where you are actively seeking to connect people on business development as well. And, you know, I mean, we all get into these networks to try to develop business, but sometimes the coachy quality or the focus group quality or the social media interactions take precedence, or it seems to me like right out of the gate, you're really trying to help people out, even on little issues or big opportunities that they might have right as we're talking. Like, you're not just, you know, intaking it and giving advice on how to do it the next time. You're like, hey, well, have you talked to this person, or can I connect you with this leader? That to me is much more pronounced in this experience than some of these other network experiences I've either heard about or been a part of. What drives that?
Well, there's a Mark Twain quote, which I'll probably butcher, but essentially it is that there's no such thing as an original idea. And I can prescribe to that in some way, but there is an infinite combination of ideas that can be established. And what creates those combination of ideas a lot of times is by happenstance, is that you're exposed to one thing or another. And I'm fascinated about how ideas work and how we can actually solve all these problems out there by really connecting the dots for different ideas and different people out there. And so I would say it's kind of central to the fact that, hey, I believe innovation, this is where innovation happens. And the strength of a network is really on how actively information can flow. Information is the currency in a network. And by being facilitators of that information flowing and looking actively at where it should flow, that is extremely gratifying to me, because we can come up with new ideas. We can really bring new concepts to the fore that wouldn't have happened otherwise.
Now we want to dig into you.
Okay.
So, but I'll be quick, because I might even be able to do it with one question. You think? Let's see. So, Matt, a good friend of ours, Kevin O'Sullivan, gave me a little bit of a window into your coming up. And when you were at Brown University, you were and remain an elite athlete in water polo. Pretty remarkable experience, I'd imagine. Amazing amount of teamwork. And then you also worked for the McChrystal Group, which is the former general Stanley McChrystal. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I've heard him and his colleagues on a couple different podcasts, and they're really mind blowing. But I'd love to learn from those two very unique experiences. You know, what were some of the greatest aspects of those that you carry on today? The lessons from water polo, the lessons from McChrystal. You know, I'd love to hear a little bit about what each of those very unique experiences brought to you, because I think you bring it to us and to the network. And I'd love to give people a little taste of that.
Well, so there is a thread that really connects all these different things. Water polo, I love the sport. I still played. I played last night. It's getting harder. There's 20 somethings that can beat me up pretty good. My joke is that I used to be small and fast, and now I'm just small.
But they can't be better. They can't be better looking than you. You got to be the most handsome executive coach in the nation.
You know, we really try and emphasize our assets here and there. But I would say, you know, within water polo, I'm not a big guy. I'm small. And was never the fastest, strongest, most athletic, most talented person on any team that I was on. And consistently, I was captain of the teams that I was a part of, though. And I believe that that's because I made a study of how the team could operate much, much better. I wasn't focused on just my individual assets. I was thinking about how the team could operate and what really allowed the grease for that team to operate well. And that's something that I think carried into, you know, my career in general. So when I started doing work in healthcare after business school, I was in charge of teams that I shared none of their functional expertise. I could not have micromanaged them if I wanted to. I had nurses, dietitians, physicians, software developers, medical billers, all these different types of people who were reporting to me, and it still seemed to go okay. And so this really led me to think, I was like, okay, maybe my skill and interest is around how teams and organizations operate. And really that's what drew me to the McChrystal Group, where, you know, their central selling point was around, hey, we changed how Joint Special Operations Command worked and communicated. And these are the guys who you hear about in the movies. Delta Force, SEALs, Rangers, CIA. Okay, so it turns out that they got to work together. They don't communicate that well with each other, nor do they necessarily like each other. Right. There's rivalry. A lot of inner rivalry that's going on there. And so how do you take this informal influence and really use that to shape where you can get leverage as an organization and drive that to how an organization can operate so that it's better than the sum of its parts? You know, and so how do you actually pull these ideas together? And that's fundamental to how I view organizations as well, is what are the leverage points that you can create so that the organization can actually operate much more strongly, that they can know exactly what the target is that they're trying to move towards, and everyone can understand how they contribute to it in a way that they're actually supporting one another. And so as I, you know, thought about the philosophy around that, ultimately it ends up being a network philosophy. How do you make a network operate really well? It's, you know, thinking about the motivations that are there and what you can accomplish beyond the actions of an individual. And so that's really, you know, what drove me to think a lot more about how AFN could support what individual CEOs can do. And, you know, I'm lucky to have a good partner in Stephen Kuhn, who's helping me out in that endeavor. And, you know, it's part of our central ethos within AFN as well. It's like, how do we actually make sure that this team concept can thrive in different definitions of team, from your own organization to this group of people who you get connected to on a regular basis, but think about you in a different context and are willing to help you.
Now that's quite a thread to pull through all that. Nice job, Matt.
Thanks, Damon.
He's Matt Sitter. He's with the Advantage Foundry Network. Matt, thanks so much for joining us on the Lobby Pod.
Thanks for having me. It was awesome. Damien, I will tell you that I got a call about 9 p.m.